There's a whole lot of things I want to tell you about. Adventures, dangerous and queer. Some you could guess, and some I've only hinted at. So please lend me your ear.
Everyone has a relationship with gender. What's your story? Hello and welcome to Gender Stories with your host, Dr. Alex Yantafi.
Welcome to another episode of the Gender Stories podcast. I am honored and thrilled to be interviewing Tilly Bridges today. Tilly is one part of the trans woman, cis woman writing team with her wife, Susan, and creators of comics, screenplays, teleplays, and audio dramas. On June this year, Bridges released Begin Transmissions, which is this wonderful book that I've been reading. I'm showing you, if you're on YouTube, you get to see the cover. If you're just listening to the podcast, it's got just a lovely cover with a rabbit at the front. And I won't say more than that, but I really recommend reading the book, especially if you watch and love the Matrix franchise of movies. So Bridges releases Begin Transmission, the trans allegories of the Matrix, tracking one person's transition journey from Thomas Anderson to Neo to Trinity. As a transgender woman, Bridges said she had always connected with the Matrix movies on a level so strongly that she didn't understand. And the first time she watched the movies after coming out publicly was revelatory. Sorry. And Tilly says I was motivated to rewatch and take notes. We're going to talk more about all the things that inspired this book and why Tilly wrote this book. But I also want to highlight that Tilly has made award-winning audio drama via their production company, Pendant Productions, since 2004 with her wife. And they've had six shows, Crack Apple Podcast Top 60. Those are sci-fi shows. Tilly and Susan are also ad writers of the 2023. There's a very loud plane, so I'm going to give it a moment. Second of day. Okay. We're getting there. We never have planes go over our house. Today is like the fourth plane. I don't know why. Anyway.
Oh, we get them all the time. We're right by an airport. It's very annoying.
It is. Tilly and her wife, Susan, have had six shows, Crack Apple Podcast Top 60 Scripted Sci-Fi Shows of All Time. And they're also ad writers of the 2023 Nebula Awards and are presenting writing for the new Monster High animated series and the Star Trek Adventures and Fallout role-playing games. And they live in Los Angeles. Welcome, Tilly. It's so good to have you here on Gender Story. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Alrighty, so let's get started. I've read the book, but of course, most of the listeners of Gender Stories haven't. So let's start from kind of why this book and why now, right? You're mostly a script writer, but you were really moved to kind of write this book. And it also seems very timely in a lot of ways. So I would love for you to share more about the inspiration for this book and how you feel about the timing of this book coming out.
So when I came out publicly in the summer of 2020, I decided to sort of chronicle my transition and talk about trans issues as I went and things that people might not notice if they're not trans. Because even among trans people who don't have very much privilege, I have a lot. I'm very, very white. I didn't lose any friends or family or jobs when I came out. And I'm in a fairly safe area of the country to live in for trans people. And so that gives me so much more privilege than a lot of other trans people have. And I wanted to use that to help if I could. So that's sort of why I started writing, because I'm a writer and that's what I do. So I thought maybe I could help trans people feel not so alone in the world, talk about things that maybe would help cis people understand us a little bit better. And it was not long after I started that people started asking me about the Matrix films, because it was around the same time that the Wachowskis, who wrote and directed the movies, had come out and said that they sort of intended the movies to be an intentional allegory. And people knew that I was a screenwriter and I was already writing about trans issues. So they started asking me about these all the time and saying, well, what does that mean? What are the movies trying to say? And so I thought, I always loved the movies, but I hadn't seen them since coming out. So I thought, I'll sit down and watch them again, and I can write an essay about them. And that became 24 essays covering the entire franchise, because I was so surprised to discover how incredibly deep and specifically they speak to what it is to be trans. And there was so much to talk about to help other people see. And so it was sort of an accidental book that way, is sort of what I call it. I didn't set out to write a book, but there were so many essays that I was able to compile them, revise them, and turn them into this book. And when I started, I kind of wondered if by the time the book came out, it might not be as relevant, because maybe things, I mean, it's always going to be relevant to some degree, because, you know, trans people need to see themselves represented in media, have our stories told, cis people need to understand us better. But I had hoped that the situation for trans people might have gotten better by the time the book would be released. And so maybe it would seem a little less relevant to some people. But unfortunately, things have gotten much, much worse, which I think only makes the book more relevant, because it is more important than ever, I think, that people understand what it really means to be trans and what it's like to live as a trans person in this world right now. So hopefully it will help increase understanding out there for the folks that need it, and will help other trans people feel not so alone and like they're seen and understood, because these movies, more than anything that I've ever encountered in mass media, understand what it is to be trans just so, so well, down to the very core.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I really feel that about the timing of this book, right? With this, this has been the worst year, I think, at this point, for anti-trans bills being introduced. I think it's over 500. Yeah. And so it does seem very timely to put out there a book that not only kind of is very analytical of all this metaphors and allegories in the Matrix, but also really kind of highlights how we also live in a matrix, right? That matrix of cisgenderism, the matrix of the gender binary, and how the matrix hurts all of us. And so I don't know if you want to say a little bit more about that piece, which you do highlight in the book, like not only there is a matrix in the movies, but we are kind of in a social cultural matrix that in a way was also created to uphold the power, right? White colonial Christian supremacist power. Absolutely. So,
I mean, I you pretty much explained it really well right there. That's that in the allegory, the matrix is the rules of our society that we're all sort of forced into at birth without our consent. So that's the false cisgender binary of only boys or only girls, only men or only women. And that is, of course, not the case. It's not dependent upon your birth or your genitals or anything like that. And the movies will show you again and again that it is, like you said, it is the cisgender white men who set up this system to extract power from it and keep themselves at the top of the social hierarchy. And so the movies do a really good job of illustrating that and showing you how they do it, what they get from it, and how that hurts all of us, including cis people, because cis people are also forced into these false gender norms, right? Where their bodies get policed if they don't look enough like a man or a woman or whatever they believe the ideal, you know, person to look like. And so it's something that harms every single one of us. And the only people that it benefits are cisgender white men. So, it's a very complicated thing to wake up to, I think, when you have been living inside it your whole life. I think it's very hard for cis people to recognize it at first, not through any fault of who they are as people, but because of a society, because they fit so perfectly in the box that they were put in at birth that they can't see it, right? Because society said, you were a man and you've always felt like a man. You've always believed you were a man. You are a man. And so therefore you don't even notice that there's anything wrong with that. So it is a very, very hard thing for people to wake up to see their privilege, to see what this does to society and how it harms all of us. So I'm hoping that the book, through the movies, can help explain that. The movies have a lot to say about it, and in a lot of really important ways, a lot of really profound ways. So my hope with the book is that people will read it along with watching the movies and take it all within context. And if you just pay attention to what the movies are saying and what they're trying to tell you about how we can make a better society for all of us, I think there's a lot of really, really great stuff there for everybody to learn.
Absolutely. And, you know, and even whether cisgender white men ultimately benefit or not, it's even questionable, right? Into the system, both the system, the matrix that we're in now, but also kind of in the movies, I feel like there's kind of all the characters go through a journey, including Smith, kind of, I think they go through their own journey in some ways. And so, oh, I have so many thoughts and so many things that I want to follow from what you said, but let's talk about the fact of how detailed your book is, right? There's literally like timestamps, you know, and I've rewatched actually all the movies recently as well, because, you know, it'd been a long time. I watched them when they first came out, you know, and I was much younger, you know, in my 20s. And then I kind of rewatched them when the last movie came out because I wanted to remind myself, and then rewatched them kind of along with the book. And the symbols are so there from the beginning, right? There were so many things I had not noticed, and it's so detailed, you know, from the, you know, cold trans opt, right at the beginning, the red pill. How did you manage to pull out so many kind of subtle symbols, which are almost easy to overlook when you watch the movie in some ways?
Because
it's just so rich, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's so much there. I think a lot of how I keyed into it all was by examining the names of the characters. In these films, the Wachowskis are very specific with the way they name characters. And if you look up what the names mean, they can give you a clue into who the people are and what they stand for. And that sort of got me thinking about the rest of it. And I had noticed when I was rewatching the first movie, the very, very specific use of color and the way red was used. And red is vital. It's so important to the entire series and in the allegories. But I noticed that it was used so specifically with so much intent. And I was trying to figure out what that meant. And then, of course, you get to the scene with the red pill and the blue pill, the iconic scene. And you realize that the red pill stood for, like, literally an estrogen pill at the time. They were red. It was called Premarin. Neo was literally choosing to take hormone replacement therapy to begin his transition into the woman that he truly is. And so that stands for the truth, who he truly is. And so that's where the whole idea of red symbolizing truth came from. And when you do that and you go back, you start the movie again and watch it that way and watch where the red is and why it's there and what are they saying about it? Why would they put it in only this specific spot in this shot? What does that mean? What are they showing you based on where the characters are and how the shots are composed? You can learn so much. So much of these allegories is conveyed visually through the use of color and the way the shots are set up and established and lit. And I think part of it was also that not only am I a writer, but I am a screenwriter. And so I am always, everything I watch, movies, television shows, even books I read, I'm always deconstructing the story, the shots, the direction, the acting, to try to learn from it, to learn what I think works and what doesn't work, to, you know, improve my own writing. And it's a thing you can't really help when you do a lot of writing, it just happens. And so because of that, I approach it from that angle, like, well, if I was a writer and I was using color in this very specific way, what would I be trying to say with it? Why would you do that? what's the intent behind it? Because everything in a piece of art is a choice made by the creators. And sometimes mm-hmm. there are other voices getting in the way. You might get studio notes that change the way things come out. And, you know, there's compromise and collaboration, but it's all still a choice. Everything you see on screen is a choice. They chose to show it to you this way at this moment in this exact style. And you can learn so much about a story by examining that and looking at the intent behind it. And the Wachowskis are really, really good at that. And they make me feel very inadequate as a writer. They're very genius. So I was very much outside of the transness of it all. I was just jealous. I was so envious as a writer. I'm like, the level they're working on is so far above what I could do, and it blows my mind.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole arc of it also, right, is just not like in the one movie. Like you said, it's kind of carried yeah. through all of the movies. And in a way, they tell the story both kind of in each movie, but in its entirety, they tell a larger story. And I think you right. highlight that beautifully in the book. And one of the things I love about The Matrix is that it highlights that the fight is not only external, right? Neo is not just fighting the matrix that's external, but it's also fighting the self-doubt, the yeah. thoughts, yeah. the am I really the one, right? And the second movie, there's so much fighting. And you do talk about how, in a way, that represents once you're out, just how challenging it is to exist in the world as a trans person. And so, right. yeah, do you want to say a little bit more about kind of that aspect of both the movies, but and how you really do justice to that in the book as well, the kind of juxtaposition of the external struggle, but also the internal struggle?
Yeah, there's a lot of introspection that every trans person goes through, right? Not just in determining that we're trans and figuring that out and choosing to go against what society tells us to be our true selves. But then, like you said, and as the movies very, very clearly show, once you are out, your life changes dramatically. Even for me, when I didn't lose family or friends or a job or a home, the way the world treated me changed drastically because the world thought I was a cisgender white man and treated me that way. And even though I never conformed to what that was supposed to be, I was the subject of a lot of bullying in school because I wasn't, you know, the way cis white boys had been told to be. I was still given a lot of privilege because of that. And that goes away as soon as you're out as a trans person and society starts coming for you. They try to legislate your healthcare away. They try to keep you out of public bathrooms. They try to keep trans kids out of sports. And it's just a mountain of things coming after you. And one of the things that I definitely thought about and that Neo specifically deals with in Reloaded is knowing how hard life was going to be, would we still have chosen to transition if we knew ahead of time? And what the movie ultimately comes to say, and the same decision that I came to, was that, yes, we would have, because no matter how hard it gets, it's not as hard as living a lie, as not being your true self. That's so much, so much harder to live through. And we don't only do it for ourselves. We do it for every trans person who will come out after us. Because one of the things, and I think I talk about this in the book some, but like when I came out publicly, I took a moment to thank all of the trans people that inspired me and made me feel like I could do it too. Like if they can transition and they can be out and they can be living their lives full of joy and happiness. And a lot of them also worked in creative fields. They were also writers and they had a career. And I thought, one of my fears was if I come out as a trans woman, could I still be a writer? Would people still hire me? Could I still, there's a lot of anti-trans discrimination, even in Hollywood. So it was a big struggle for me, and seeing them out there, just being themselves, experiencing trans joy, telling our stories. It meant so much to me, and it made me feel that I could do it too. And I wanted to be able to do that for someone else. If I'm out there, if I show my joy, if I talk about trans stories and put those things out there, it's going to inspire someone else out there who is not out yet, or maybe not even sure they're trans, to find their true self, to think that they can do it too. So it's internal, but it's also external, not just the struggles, but the rewards, because we're a community and we're all in it together with each other, and we have to help each other through it. And that's also what Revolutions gets into a lot, because one of the main themes of that movie is dealing with internalized transphobia and the way society worms that into all of us, and how we have to overcome it if we ever really want to be our true selves and free of the weight that society places on us, thinking I'm not trans enough. My dysphoria isn't the same as this other person, so maybe I don't have a right to transition. And none of that is true, right? So it's, we can help each other through that as well. We can, you know, we've all been through it. We're all going through it. There are people, other trans people at different stages of their journeys. And those who've gone through it before can help us through. They can reach a hand back and help us get through that darkness. So it's a lot of it. When you track the four movies, the first movie is about realizing that you're trans and choosing to transition. Mm-hmm. So that's where Thomas Anderson becomes Neo. And so then Reloaded, as I talked about, is knowing how hard life was going to become, would you still choose to transition? Mm-hmm. And then when you get to Revolutions, it's about internalized transphobia and trying to figure out, if society is so set against trans people, where can we possibly go in the future? How can we find a way forward? Mm-hmm. What would society have to be in order for trans people to live our full, authentic lives, free of this sort of discrimination? And when you get to Resurrections, that sort of hopeful future that Revolutions strove mm-hmm. for at the end did not come to pass. And so Neo has detransitioned back into Thomas Anderson. Mm-hmm. And it's really painful for me to watch that, knowing that it hurts my heart that he gave up being his true self, because mm-hmm. life was too hard existing as a trans person, which is, of course, like the main reason trans people detransition, is because it's so hard for them to exist as mm-hmm. trans in this world. And so it's about realizing that that was still a mistake, and that being your true self, your authentic self, is the right thing to do, and choosing to retransition. And that's when he finally makes it all the way to Trinity through the whole series represents his self-actualization. And the fourth one also very specifically deals with the erasure and co-opting of trans voices in mm-hmm. general, but also very specifically the Wachowskis themselves, and the way the red pill has been misappropriated by the right-wing elements of our society and taken to mean the exact opposite of what they intended, and what that does to the community, what that does to a person when your words are taken and used against you. So this series has so much to say about so many aspects of trans life. You know, when I wrote the explanation of the first movie, I didn't think necessarily that the allegories would continue through every movie. And if they did, I never thought that they would have so many different things to say. Each movie builds upon what came before and talks about a different aspect of trans existence. And it's just so absolutely remarkable. I was also really scared when Resurrections came out, because I had written my analysis of the first three movies before that. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid that Resurrections was going to blow it all up and show how wrong I was. And, you know, that I was just seeing things that weren't really there, only what I wanted to see. And so I was really nervous about it. But then I watched the movie, and instead of that, what it did is reconfirm everything mm-hmm. that I had written about the first three in the strongest way possible, which really blew my mind. So it's, I don't know. I can't recommend it enough, just understanding what the Wachowskis did in this remarkable series of movies, because when you understand it on its most foundational level and what it's saying about us, it gives you a feeling. I don't even know how to describe it. There's nothing else that has ever given me that feeling. I've never felt so seen by anything. And I've seen you know, shows that are really wonderful shows that are written by trans people that explicitly, not in allegory, speak to the trans experience. And they're wonderful and they mean so much to me. But none of them still has gone as deep as this series has, as specifically over so much time. And so, it's just, I want every trans person to be able to feel as seen by those as I do, because they understand us. They understand us so well down to our very core. And they're for all of us. They're ours. They're their communities, right? They belong to the Wachowskis, but trans people don't have hardly any media directed at us. We don't have, this is the only like quote unquote trans franchise that exists. There's nothing else. This is all we've got. And we are so lucky that the one franchise we do have is so, so good and so specifically about us through every frame of every movie.
Yeah, and like you said, one of the things that's different is just how comprehensive of the range of experiences it is, right? Even that kind of, this is too hard, I'm just going to go back, right? That retransition, the retransitioning through our lifespan, which many trans people experience, right? I'm going to get out there. Things are really hard. I might take a few steps back. I might kind of just dip myself back in, you know, and there can be fluidity and movement in that journey. And sometimes that's a hard thing to talk about. And it's a hard thing to watch as a trans person too, right? And I also love how you talked about how, you know, unfortunately, symbols can be taken away and used in a very different way, just like the red pill, right, has been appropriated by kind of the right wing. So what would you say to people that, you know, think that, and I've heard this many times, even when I'm like, oh, here's like a, you know, trans allegory in this movie or that movie. And people are like, you're just seeing things because you're trans yourself and you're seeing everything through that lens, you know, and I'm sure there are cis people who might be listening and think, but I relate to the Matrix and I'm not trans. So why do I relate to this franchise? Yeah. You know, I think it's bigger than just a trans experience. What would you say to those cis folks who might feel that way?
The thing I would say is that it is bigger than the trans experience because the trans experience is a human experience. Trans stories are human stories. You might not know what it's like to transition from your perceived gender to your true gender, but you know what it's like to go through big changes in your life. You know what it's like to be scared to do the thing that you know is right, but you're not sure how people will react and you're afraid of that. You know what it's like to have societal expectations placed upon you that you don't necessarily agree with or that you think are outright wrong. And it can be really intimidating and difficult to examine that, to push back against it. So even if you don't know what it's like to be transgender, you know what all of those things are like. Every human has been through things like that. And that's why I think everybody can identify with these movies and maybe don't think that they're trans because they also identify with it. And if they identify with it and they're cis, how can it possibly be trans? And it's because trans stories are human stories and you can identify with that. But also, I think there's a non-zero percentage of those people who maybe are eggs and don't realize it, right? And they don't want to be like, I ran into that myself at the beginning, and Neo goes through it in the first movie. Well, I'm not trans because I don't want to be trans. That would be too hard. I don't want to deal with this. I'm not. I'm going to keep pretending I'm cis. And it doesn't work. It's hard. It's a horrible way to exist. And there's a lot of pushback through that. So again, it's like, just getting cis people to wake up to the fact that there is sort of a forced binary that's placed on all of us at birth that they don't see initially. So it's one of those things. It's like waking up to any of your possible privileges can be a very difficult thing to do because society is invested in you not doing that. It's invested in you upholding the status quo so those same cis white men at the top can keep extracting power. So it's a really tough thing, but you have to go into these things with an open mind. You have to want to learn. You have to want to understand. And you have to be able to admit that there is definitely a chance that two trans women were writing about transness. It's just, it's not, you know, there, it's not out of the realm of possibility that that might happen, that they might write from their own experiences. And, you know, recently, the Wachowskis have sort of walked back their mention that it was intentional, and that they say that some parts definitely were, but other parts, it was just them telling stories and examining, you know, what their life was like. And that is absolutely true. But in my perspective, that doesn't make it any less intentional, because, like, as a writer, after I came out, after I accepted and after I realized and then accepted and my transness and came out, I looked back at a lot of my old writing, and it's a little embarrassing now that I couldn't see it, but through so much of it, I was working through my own very complicated feelings about gender and trying to figure out what that meant. In so many of my stories, there's a weird body swap thing happens that, oh, a man is in a woman's body. What happened? Oh, that's so weird. And it's in, like, every one of my stories, right? So I was clearly working through something. And if you asked me at the time, are you writing a trans allegory? Are you talking about being trans? I would have been like, no, that's bananas. Of course I'm not. I'm a cis man that I'm just writing fiction, right? But I clearly was subconsciously working through my own transness without realizing it. And all of us do that. There's this sort of well-known thing among screenwriters. And I assume this probably also applies to novelists and all kinds of writers, where you write the first draft of something, and when you reread it to start your revisions, that's when you figure out what the theme was. Like, sometimes you go in with a theme, yes, it might even have a secondary theme, or some, it might end up being something entirely different than what you intended. You look at it and you're like, oh, that's what I was writing about. And you didn't even consciously realize it until it was done. And then you go through the revisions and you strengthen it and make it more intentional. But it's a very known thing that you kind of often learn what the theme of a piece is after you've completed that first draft of it. So when we think we're just writing, we're just telling stories, we're always bringing our own baggage to all of that. All the things that we're dealing with, that we're thinking about, that's running through our heads, gets put into our work. That's what art is, right? It's our expression. It's our feelings. It's our emotion. It's our thoughts and desires. And so even if you're not consciously saying, I'm going to write this about being trans, if you are trans and you are deeply closeted at the time, as they were, and as they have even now admitted that they were deeply closeted at the time, you had to be, or these movies would have never gotten made. You're going to be working through those things, because that's what's occupying your emotional and your emotional space, your energy, your thoughts. And so it's just going to make it into your work. And so I don't think that really changes the intent behind any of it. It's all very clearly still there. And some of it, actually quite a lot of it, as I point out in the book, is very, very surface level. Like, if you just look at what Thomas Anderson means, the name means twin, yes, of the manly or masculine. That's not a coincidence. You don't accidentally pick that. And even if you did, there's like 500 other examples that blatant right behind it. So those aren't all chance. If you just look at it with an open mind, and you'll see it's all right there. And a lot of it is very surface level.
I love that. And I agree. You know, I think that as somebody who's also a writer, there is a process of exploration when you write. And sometimes you look back and you're like, oh, that's what I was exploring, or that's what I was, I don't know, integrating. And so it makes sense to me that the Wachowski would create something that did speak to the trans experience even before they were out. And I also love what you said about, you know, some people who might think they're cis might be not trans yet. And I know you use the term egg, which for the listeners who don't know, that means just somebody who's not aware yet of their trans identity. Sometimes people around them might be, but they're not quite yet aware. And I say sometimes people around them might be, because it's like when I came out, everybody was like, oh yeah, about time. Very few people are surprised.
Yeah, that happens to a lot of us.
Exactly. I don't think that's a unique experience. But a lot, even, you know, those, cis people watch and love The Matrix, I think, of course, like, we all have a, you know, I truly believe that we all have a relationship with gender. That's kind of foundational to the podcast, but it's also foundational to a lot of my writing. I really truly believe that gender liberation is for everybody, and we are all in this matrix, right? And that matrix is restrictive ultimately for everyone, you know, even I think in some ways, I'm always fascinated by Agent Smith also when I watch the movies, because there is a lot in that character too. So I don't know if you want to speak to that, to even to like, how does this matrix impact like even the pinnacle, let's say, which is cis white man of power, right. They're still impacted. So yes.
Yeah. Okay. So Smith is fascinating because he starts off as sort of the personification of the passive transphobia of society, of a society that maybe, I stress maybe, didn't know trans people existed and thought there were only cis men and cis women and set it up that way. And so when you're in a society that's established that way, trans people are going to be left out and oppressed just by the very basics of that. But over the course of the first movie, as he comes to understand Neo and Neo's transness, he morphs into the personification of active transphobia, the kind mm-hmm. that acknowledges that trans people do exist only so that they can try to stop us from existing, legislate against us and try to make it impossible for us to get healthcare and be our true selves. And he sort of stays as that through the rest of the movies, but he has this journey he goes on where you see it mostly in Reloaded and in through mm-hmm. Revolutions, where he's envious that Neo or trans people don't play by the rules of society. We don't have to do what society says because we know society is wrong. And he wants to feel that freedom too. It's an envy. It's a jealous. And I think a lot of transphobic cis people have that within them. We don't follow the rules and they don't understand why they have to and we don't. And of course they don't have to, but they feel like they do. Yes. And so then he gets to this point where he's exactly, this is part of the genius of it, is that the Wachowskis saw all these, the right-wing men's rights activists, people who appropriated the red pill coming, and Smith becomes one of them. And he's like, no, I'm outside of the system, just like you. I'm so outside of the system. Nobody's the boss of me. I'm the one deciding what I want to do. And what I want to do is oppress trans people and uphold the cisgender binary, right? And he doesn't even understand that that's exactly what society wants him to do. You are part of the matrix. Mm-hmm. You are part of society. You're doing exactly what they want. He's so far inside the matrix, he thinks he's outside of it. And that's all of those people who have misappropriated the red pill that use it to stand for, oh, take the red pill. And it means you'll understand that cis white men are the oppressed ones and we're the ones losing our rights because other people are finally getting them. And it's bonkers. And when you get to, Resurrections, he's sort of taken on a literal new face. He tries to pretend that he's gentler and kinder, and he uses buzzwords. And he and the analysts specifically both sort of fall into that rainbow capitalism area where they're all, look, we're cool and we're hip and we're giving you a t-shirt with a trans flag on it. Now don't ask us for any rights because you've got enough. That's all you need. And the second that Neo is like, no, that's not all I need. I need to be my true self. I need to have equal rights and access to the medication that I need. Smith goes right back to how he's always been, right? He's transphobia. He's active transphobia trying to end you. And so they use him really, really brilliantly through the entire series to say a lot about that aspect of our society and how circular their logic is.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's one of the things I love is kind of that journey of almost all these different faces of cisgenderism and transphobia through the franchise, right? As well as exploring that trans experience in some ways, exploring all the ways in which societally we might encounter, you know, from indifference and erasure and ignorance all the way to hate, all the way to covert discrimination, you know, and all the way back into very open and hostile kind of transphobia, if anything is poked at. Absolutely. And like you said, it's just layers and layers and layers. I feel like we could talk about this all day, really. one of the things I'm curious about, right? I mean, it's like there's so many layers. One of the things I'm curious about is your relationship to science fiction and speculative fiction. I've actually been talking about this a lot lately because I'm interviewing quite a few speculative fiction and sci-fi author or people who love space. And I think there is something about trans and queer folks really being into sci-fi and speculative fiction as a way of exploring, existing, healing even.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about your relationship to sci-fi and where that passion for sci-fi comes from. And yeah, just your relationship to the genre.
I deeply love sci-fi and fantasy. And it started in childhood. And it probably... honestly, looking back, it probably started with Star Trek, which I'm still an absolutely massive fan of. And I remember seeing it as a kid and being so, I don't know what the word is, just surprised at how, at the sort of utopic world that it presents, at the look at all of these people who are so different and so vastly strange, even some of the aliens, right? And they're all coming together. They're accepting each other for who they are. And because of their differences, they like that. It makes them stronger together and they can accomplish good in this world by working together and accepting each other. And Star Trek was also really heavily leans into allegory a lot of times, as a lot of sci-fi does, because it lends itself to that, because you can talk about important political issues of the day without it being that on the surface. And so, like, especially on a TV show like Star Trek, even like the original in the 60s, they could talk about racism without talking about racism. And getting that on TV in the 60s would have, as a surface level, like racism story about like the way white people in this society treat black people would have been almost impossible. But because of the sci-fi layer over it, because of using allegory, they were able to tell these really important stories that you couldn't really tell otherwise at the time. And, you know, I think that absolutely holds true with The Matrix, because if the Wachowskis were out as trans women in the late 90s, they would have never gotten this movie deal. We're in 2023 and trans people can't get TV shows sold. We can't get movies made. We have trouble getting hired on there are TV shows about trans people that have no trans writers on the staff. And it's that hard for us now. And so if they didn't use allegory, if they said, here's going to be a movie, maybe not even a franchise, just the first movie. And it's going to be about discovering that you're trans and accepting it and choosing to transition. No one would have ever given them the money to make that movie. No one would have ever let them make that movie. Warner Brothers wouldn't have turned it into a franchise that made them tons and tons and tons of money. And all of us people would not have gotten to see it. And we would not have gotten to feel so seen by it and understood by it. And there's so much value in that. And genre fiction gives you that incredible power to do that, to tell these stories and get them past the gatekeepers without them realizing that's what you're doing. And then you get it out into the world. And, you know, that's one of the things that the movies talk about very specifically, is that cis people are the gatekeepers to just about everything trans people need in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, very specifically, they were the gatekeepers to the Wachowskis getting their stories out. But also, like, almost all doctors that trans people have are cis doctors, because there's not that many trans people and not all of us can have trans doctors. And we... like, when I wanted to get access to hormone replacement therapy, I had to speak to a therapist first and convince this cis woman that I was trans, that I am a woman. And you shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to convince a cis person that I'm trans, right, in order to get my health care. Mm-hmm. And it's really messed up. So our whole society is like that in so many ways. And so that's one of the really beautiful things about genre stories, is that they can get those stories out there, and they can also let us imagine better worlds where mm-hmm. things go right, and, you know, we can create a better society together. They can show us a path forward and a way to brighter futures, and I love that.
Absolutely. There's just a subversive power inherently present, I think, in sci-fi and fantasy and speculative fiction, which is really wonderful and freeing. Oh, yes. Again, could talk about this so all day. I am curious. All day long, honestly, maybe we should. Maybe we should have a whole other episode talking just about science fiction. I'll be up for it. I'm curious, you know, in a way, you talk about this franchise with a lot of warmth and affection, both in our conversation, but also in the book. Is there anything that about the Matrix, I'm just going to call it the Matrix franchise to refer to the totality of the movies. Is there anything that you're like, the Wachowskis could have done better, you know, about this aspect or that aspect? Is there kind of any aspect of the movies that you feel could be different or could be better or maybe wearing us, I don't know, something that you don't like about them, I guess. That's all I'm asking at its basic level.
There's only one thing, really, and it's in Resurrections. The context of that movie changed from the original trilogy because after the original trilogy ended, the Wachowskis came out under very different circumstances, and it was not great. I believe it was for Lily. She was outed without her and her say-so, which is terrible, and that should never, ever happen to anybody. But they are out now. And so when you go into Resurrections, you are getting a story from Lana Wachowski, who is an out trans woman. She's been out for 20 years. And that's so, so different than being closeted in the late 90s and early 2000s. And so the context does change there. And what I was disappointed by was that there were not more trans people on screen in Resurrections. There's one, I think there's just one trans man who appears, and I think he might only have one or two lines. It's a really tiny little role. And that's it. And that really disappointed me because I understand, especially in the original trilogy, why that couldn't have happened. You know, even they weren't even allowed to portray Switch as a trans character in the show, which they were going to be one gender outside of the Matrix and a different gender inside it. Even within that sci-fi construct, Warner Brothers wouldn't let them do it. And so I absolutely understand that there weren't any trans people on screen or out trans people on screen anyway, as far as we know, in that original trilogy. But I really, really hoped that we could have had a lot more trans people on screen in the fourth movie because it's you know, again, the inherent transness of them and how important they are to the entire community and have been for decades to get to see more of us represented in it. And I don't, the hard thing with Hollywood for people who aren't maybe as inside it as I am, is that you don't know who's responsible for that. Lana could have had a list of 10 trans actors that she wanted to put in and Warner Brothers said no. We have no way to know. I believe the Wachowskis are both so very public about their transness. They do so much for trans causes. They're wonderful advocates. So I feel like Lana probably would have tried to get more in there and was just still, even still with all the clout and experience and credits that she has now, probably still was not allowed to. We don't know. We have no way to know what the actual reasoning behind that is. If it was studio notes, if it was producer notes, if it was a choice of Lana's, which I really don't think it was, but we really don't have any way to know. So there's nobody we can point to and blame for it, but I just find it a kind of a disappointing thing. I'd really hoped we would get to have a lot more of us be seen as part of that world.
I agree, because it's like, I understand historically how we've had to see ourselves through allegory, right? And through metaphor, but you know, you would hope, but I think it highlights just how strong that Matrix is in some way, not just the Matrix of the movies, but our Matrix of cisgenderism. Yeah. That even with all that fame, power, money, influence, you still cannot center a trans story in such a major, you know, dominant culture, sci-fi franchise, let's call it. It really goes to show how strong the Matrix is. And I love how you said, we can't point our finger to anybody. And often that's how cisgenderism works, right? It's an ideology. So you can say it's this person or that person because it's the whole ideology that keeps perpetuating that erasure and that lack of representation. Yeah. It's a little bit depressing, I have to say, when we think about it.
It is.
But yes. And at the same time, I think that it's a testament to our creativity, how we still get to tell our stories as trans people. We still get to create our content, tell our stories, even in the face of a system that's very much against it and that very much doesn't want us to be visible or to tell our stories. And I think that is beautiful.
It is. While it's really tough, like if you're looking at mainstream media to find trans movies or trans TV shows, you can definitely find it if you look at the indie stuff. There are so many trans people out there creating and just putting up their stories, their short films, their web comics, their writing, their novels, their short stories, all of these things. If you look online, there's so many. And that's really beautiful. And I wouldn't want to lose that, but I do think we also need that mainstream representation, because attitudes on trans people in this country really do need to change. And mostly it's a very vocal minority that's against us, right? Like we saw in the 2022 elections in the United States, every Republican that campaigned on an anti-trans rhetoric lost their race. And that's really good.
Yeah.
It shows that the majority of people in this country aren't against us, but I think there isn't maybe also a majority that's for us. There's a lot of people that are just ambivalent about us, and they don't understand that that ambivalence enables the bigotry, right? If you're not fighting it, you're part of the problem. You're allowing it to happen. And the way we can get more of those people on our side is having more of those people exposed to us so that they can learn our stories. They can see we're just human beings like them. We have the same likes and dislikes. And some of us love pineapple on pizza and some of us don't. And it's okay, right? We're just human beings. And there's a great story that I love to point to about this, in that the TV sitcom Modern Family had a gay male couple that was just presented like any other married couple on the show. They had little arguments. They had little in-jokes. They were very loving. They loved each other. They were in a great relationship. And there were like studies done that showed that because that show was so popular and it was on a mainstream US television network, it changed perception in this country towards marriage equality. And it's part of what let marriage equality happened was that the public perception changed, because art is so powerful to show these human experiences. And all of those people living in tiny little towns that maybe didn't know any out gay people, didn't know what it was like, learned. And they were like, oh my gosh, they're just normal people like us. They have the same little quirks. They have the same little foibles. They're also, they can be great. They can have problems. They're just human beings. And once you realize that, you realize we're all not that different from each other. And it becomes so much harder to not care about those people or to actively hate them. Understanding breeds acceptance. So I think that the indie trans creative scene is beautiful and wonderful, and I never want to lose it. But we do also need cis accomplices in mainstream media to help us get our stories out there and get them told, because that's what's going to really change, or at least really help change things for the better in this country.
Absolutely. I think the storytelling is so important to help with empathy and connection, right? Because often people feel, well, the trans experience is so different from my experience, it's miles away. But is it miles away? Because I don't think so. And, you know, the number
it's
of
not.
Times I've
no.
talked to, it's really not. Exactly.
I've talked to, you know, I've talked to a lot of cis people who have told me that before talking to me or before reading a bunch of the essays that I've written and posted about the trans experience, that they didn't know any trans people. They'd never met any trans people that they were aware of. And they just didn't know anything about trans life. And what it was like, and what's how society treats us, what it's really like to have to deal with all of this societal transphobia. And they understand now. And one of the most beautiful things is that I've had a lot of cisgender parents of trans kids tell me that they understand their trans kids better now and feel better able to support them in being their true selves. And that's beautiful and that's wonderful. And that's all that we need in this world, is just understanding. So That's why I put myself out there. That's why I write all of the things I do. That's why I wrote this book, because I just want us all to get along. We're all just a big, happy, fumbling, dirty family of human beings, right? We're all flawed and we're all beautiful in our own way. So.
Oh, absolutely. I relate to so much of what you said. Even as a writer, you know, and the reason I write mostly nonfiction, but a lot of what I write, even like How to Understand Your Gender or Mother Book Gender Trauma, is really a lot of it is for cis audiences. Don't get me wrong. I'm always overjoyed when trans and non-binary folks and gender expansive folks get something out of what they're reading. But one of my intention is always to, you know, invite cisgender people into this conversation about gender in a way that helps them kind of crack that matrix open a little bit more. And it's so satisfying when I get those messages of like, I'm a cis straight man and I got a lot out of reading your book. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I want. I want you to get a lot out of reading this book. Absolutely. But it's at both ends, right? It's like trans creators tend to be more fringe, and it is time for trans voices, I think, to get more centered and to be more visible in a kind of mainstream way. I really agree. If we're to turn this kind of tide, I think that's so important. Oh, again, this is another aspect of the conversation that I could be having for ages, but I do want to be respectful of your time. So I will ask you the last question that I always ask, which is there anything that I have not asked you about or that we haven't talked about that you were really hoping to communicate to the listeners of Gender Stories? So any stone that we left unturned, which you would really like to kind of communicate to our listeners? And if there isn't, that's okay too.
No, I think this was a great discussion, and I think we've covered most of it. I think the one thing I just want everyone to take away from the book, but mostly from the movies, is like I say in the book, I'm just a guide. I'm just an interpreter. This is all the work and the genius of the Wachowskis. They have brilliant minds and gigantic hearts, and they have such beautiful, beautiful things to say about humanity and where we can go together if we just stop hating each other. So that's really it. You know, just try to approach everybody with an open mind. We're all human beings. We're all dealing with our own crap. And just be kind and try to help each other through and always, always reach for understanding. That's like at the core of these movies, right? Just we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. Choose not to hate each other. Choose to love instead.
I love that. What a beautiful message to end on. And if people want to find out more about your work in general, as well as order your book, where should they go on the internet?
You can order the book. It's open for pre-orders right now everywhere that you can order books. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and digital. And I will be working on an audiobook, but we don't have a date for that yet. But that will be coming down the line if that is what you prefer. If you are interested in my trans essays that cover media, they cover how to be a good ally. They cover the trans basics, if you just don't know. They cover trans life and what it's like to live as a trans person in this world. Those are all at tillystranstuesdays.com, which is also a podcast, if you prefer listening that way, that you can find on all podcasting platforms. If you are interested in the fiction and screenwriting that my wife and I do as a team, you can find links to all of our work and credits at birdguest.com. And I'm on just about every social media as Tilly Bridges. So you can look me up and say hi. And if you have questions about this stuff or any of this stuff, please hit me up. I'm always delighted to talk about it. And people will never, ever get me to shut up about the Matrix. It's a real problem. So if you have questions, if you read the book and you want something explained better, whatever, just hit me up and say hi. I'll never, ever shut up. You might regret it because I'll never stop talking about it. But I'm here.
I don't think that's a delightful trait. I don't think that's a problem. But yeah, so I will put all those links in the episode description, listeners. So don't worry if you kind of miss them, as Tilly was saying them. I'm going to put them all in the episode description so that you can find all that information And here's the book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix. And, you know, as Tilly says, I really recommend reading it alongside watching the movies. It really is an experience. And it's a wonderful experience. Thank you so much, Tilly. It's been such a pleasure and a joy to have you on the show. It's been wonderful to talk about the Matrix, and I love your message of love and connection that you left us with. So thank you so much for your time today.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you for having me. This was an absolutely great discussion, and you're wonderful.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, listeners, and now viewers, for those of you who are watching the podcast on YouTube, now that we started uploading on YouTube. And I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your loyalty, your reviews. I really appreciate you. And until next time.